This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Call the phone and shut the show.
It is Danny and Gallant, and the San Francisco 49ers are coming in with a... They've got a little bit of, not a puffed out chest, but they're making some noise about being the crazy ones in this matchup. They're the ones with nothing to lose. They're the ones that might be undermanned, might be injury riddled, but they're going to go to a dark place and summon the kind of anger and enthusiasm that's necessary for winning football, Paul.
What is this, a movie? They keep on saying a dark place. This sounds like some sort of a movie, and this buzzword has honestly gotten annoying to me. Will we go to our dark place before every single game? Really? Do we need to hear this as much as we've heard it from Kyle Shanahan, from George Kittle, from other members of the 49ers? Jeff Wilson, I guess, we heard from on Sunday. This is a strange, strange thing that they are really trying to make everyone know. Hey, when we go in our dark place, you really need to worry about us.
Yeah, well, here was Kyle Shanahan talking about the mindset that he gets into before he goes out to call plays.
I get into a very... kind of sharp, aggressive, quick. I try to rev myself. I don't try to rev myself up. It happens naturally throughout the week. And by kickoff, it's kind of ready to bite someone's head off. And it's always kind of just attacking and going. And
that sounds terrifying. That sounds absolutely terrifying to me. There's nothing more petrifying than the idea of being able to bite someone's head off with a flat brimmed cap and expertly called zone stretch runs. Yep. Terrifying.
One of the amusing things about Shanahan, too, with those brim hats that you talk about, they have such tiny logos on it. Is he trying to mess with us? The logos have gotten smaller and smaller. Shanahan does not strike me as someone who is particularly intimidating on the sideline. Maybe it's because of his size. Maybe I'm being a little bit mean to people like myself, the slender types. But it's weird that he was talking about it in such a way. And I guess, Danny, that mentality has actually somehow seeped into the rest of the 49ers team, this idea that, hey, when you play, be someone else. Be someone different, because maybe it gets something different out of you. I don't know if I necessarily subscribe to it, but the 49ers sure do.
Well, that idea, I mean, this is the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde is a very tried and true approach.
Great book.
For football players and for coaches, in fact, trying to talk about the different things. Kyle said that he can even be a little bit rude on game day, Paul.
I'm making a lot of apologies to people sometimes on Sunday nights and Mondays. That's why I like working with people who we all know each other. So lots of times people don't try to take it personally. I mean, we're just all trying to win. But I say to people a lot, I'm not trying to be nice. I'm just trying to figure out the best answer as quick as I can with as few words as possible.
Sorry for biting your head off. It wasn't personal.
Right, because that's definitely a dark place. I want to get to the quickest answer possible with the fewest words possible. I get the approach. And honestly, San Francisco comes into this game with one path to victory in my mind, which is they run over Seattle. That they shorten the game, they limit the possessions, and that Seattle needs to be able to stop the run game. And that's almost always true, but the only path to victory in my mind in this game for the San Francisco 49ers is if they control the game on the ground, if they control the tempo and Seattle is unable to stop their ground game. If this game comes down to, and they force Jimmy Garoppolo to make plays, I don't see San Francisco coming out on top.
Peak run defense performance against Ezekiel Elliott and the Dallas Cowboys. But you take a look at the rest of this year, and now you have to wonder if maybe Ezekiel Elliott has been continuously affected after his positive test for COVID-19 this offseason. The last couple of games, the Cardinals, when the Seahawks defense was tired, had its way running the football. The Minnesota Vikings were consistently able to run the ball, not just with Dalvin Cook, but with Alexander Mattison. In those two games, he did not have Jamal Adams. Danny, I was a little excited hearing that maybe Jamal Adams was a game-time decision from Pete Carroll, but it doesn't sound like he is going to actually play. And without Jamal Adams, Danny, I'm nervous about their ability to stop San Francisco's running game. I think you need that one guy that is flying all over the field and just wrecking people, making plays, especially setting the edge against San Francisco, which is so good at doing those little speed sweep and those quick moves that get to the outside.
Run defense is about discipline and it's about toughness. Run defense is about fulfilling your assignments and being able to count on the other guy to fill his gaps. it certainly would help to have Jamal Adams, who is one of your two best defensive players out there. But your ability to stop the run does not depend on the presence of a strong safety. Everybody needs to do their job. Everybody needs, and I'm honestly, yeah, they're going to miss Jamal Adams. I don't think he'll play, but I'm excited to see Jordan Brooks in this game. I think Jordan Brooks took a huge step forward, got significant playing time, and I think that those sort of guys, and Quentin Dunbar needs to get his nose up into the backfield and to tackle better. This is going to be about desire. This is not about Seattle's sort of ability to defend the pass or whether this defense is good enough. This is a gut check. This is simply like you've got to summon that up, because every defense should be able to stop the run, and you have to stop the run in this game.
This has to be the game where Jordan Brooks plays well over 50% of the snaps. He got close to it in this past game against Arizona. I think he played like 48% of it. Dave Wyman did a great video on 710sports.com talking about the things that Brooks was able to do and showing a little film work, not just dropping back in coverage, but shooting the gap, of course, on that Kyler Murray run to the left. Yeah, I want him all over the field. He has a really just innate ability to see small holes in the offensive line and to shoot through them with power and force. And yeah, you need that against a 49ers rushing attack that is going to try and find ways with that zone blocking scheme of theirs to get to the outside and make it difficult for your linebackers on the edge.
Yeah, and that speed was what he was brought in here for, right?
Mm-hmm.
That speed and the additions of Jordan Brooks and bringing in Jamal Adams and the emphasis they made in this offseason was about getting this team faster, because you know in this division you have two teams that want to run the ball laterally, that want to get to the edge. And it's different. Both the Rams and the 49ers, they want to run the ball, but they don't want it to be between the tackles. Whether it's some of the speed sweeps that they've used, whether it's the fly sweep, they want to get the ball on the edge and force you to run from one side of the field to the other. And this is an opportunity for Jordan Brooks to show that he's equipped to do just that.
Honestly, the Cardinals aren't that much different either. I think when the Cardinals are at their best, they're getting it out to Kenyon Drake on the edge, and it's Kyler Murray scrambling. That at least is what they are right now. That could change, of course, over time. So yeah, more Brooks. Give me all of the Mr. Brooks, and I hope that he is a lot like we're talking about psychopaths. The Mr. Brooks played by Kevin Costner. Underrated movie. One of Kevin Costner's better movies, in fact. Have you seen that movie?
I have not.
It's a good movie. It's a good movie.
Okay.
I recommend checking it out. It's definitely not Friday caliber.
The Seahawks and their defense, they need to win this game, and it's not just for positioning within the division. It's about having the toughness. If they can't win at home against a 49ers team that's as banged up as they are, I have a really hard time of seeing them have success long term over the course of the season. Last week's game didn't change my expectations for this team, and it didn't change what I thought. If they lose this game, it will. If they're not able to stop a team that they you know what their San Francisco's approach is going to be. You know what they're going to be able to do. And if you can't summon it up, if you can't, this isn't about the skill level of your defense. It's about the ability to be correct and to be assignment. You have to be able to stop the run.
Right. And you can't have moments like you seem to be having against Kyler Murray and company in that Sunday night game. And I also think you have to show the ability that you can get back up from the mat when you're sent down to it, whether it's because of injuries or you just lose. I don't think the Seahawks handled that particularly well last year. And I do ask, what is the difference between this year's team and last year's team? I think it's that they're doing things differently on offense. But for the most part, the results, the injuries, they're still happening. And I feel that if you don't find a way to show some toughness and bounce back here, that this could end up being a real problem. Because, of course, you're playing your toughest stretch of the season right now.
It is your toughest stretch. And you talked about it that, hey, you think they're going to go 4-1. I thought that was overly ambitious. They've dropped the one there. They've dropped the one. And I think if they go 3-2 over this five-game stretch, they still will have a shot at the number one overall seed in the conference. I don't see anyone else running away with it in that regard. But if you lose this game, I don't think you're going to be able to pull off 3-2 over that five-game stretch. This is the most difficult stretch they have.
Is there only one formula for them to lose? Is it only San Francisco running all over them?
I think so, man. I really can't see, and you look at it, Jimmy Garoppolo, and watching the way he's played, he's had stretches where he's been good, and in games against Seattle, I haven't seen it this year. He couldn't stay in the game against Miami, and they said afterward they needed to protect him and go, I don't think he's 100% right. I think he's got a lot of questions he's dealing with coming off of the Super Bowl last year. And when I look at this game, the route to them losing is that that San Francisco is able to play the way Minnesota played against Seattle the entire game. That they have Minnesota's first half the entire game against Seattle. And Seattle's offense just doesn't ever get the opportunities it needs.
Yeah, and, well, I feel I shouldn't say this, and I tweeted it out. Is Jimmy Garoppolo bad? And 54% of y'all, I think we had 500 votes, said yes. And then the other options were no, and I don't know, but he's handsome. And those split 50-50 as far as no, and I don't know, he's handsome. He's better than you guys think he is. And this secondary is worse than it was last year when one of those guys, if it's Quentin Dunbar or Shaquille Griffin, is off the field. I like Trey Flowers. I want him to be successful. And we have seen him be good in the past. We have not seen it this year. And if Trey Flowers is out there on a regular basis, Deebo Samuel or no Deebo Samuel, even if it's just Brandon Ayuk and Kendrick Bourne and some of the other guys that the 49ers have at wide receiver, I just don't feel comfortable with the Seahawks secondary. And I think I'm going to have a hard time really feeling that comfort for the rest of the season.
This doesn't come down to who's in the backfield, because this should be, if Jimmy Garoppolo is going to drop back and try to beat you deep, that's what you want. That should be a recipe for turnovers. I'm not afraid of that. And I don't see that. If you're gonna lose in a shootout to Jimmy Garoppolo, you're not a good team.
Well, yeah, and honestly, if it gets into a shootout, you should win that game. I'm 100% with you there. Jimmy Garoppolo outscoring you should not happen.
And Trey Flowers, the reality is he's the third cornerback on the team. And he's going to be counted on and trusted. You have to be ready, especially with Quentin Dunbar, who's going to be dealing with a bulky knee this entire season. If Shaquille Griffin does not play in this game, that should not profoundly affect your chances of winning this game against this quarterback.
Man, I have a hard time. I have a hard time agreeing, because I know that the way that this team plays defense, they're going to keep things in front of them. But you want to have guys that are going to be confident playing maybe a little bit closer up. And whether it's Ken Norton Jr. telling these guys to play off, San Francisco, their entire offense is designed to have Garoppolo get the ball out quickly, because he has an exceptionally quick release into one of these receivers, and for them to catch the football and move with it. And there have been some tackling issues this year for Seattle. I don't think San Francisco is going to try to beat him deep. I think San Francisco is going to do that dink and dunk stuff. And that dink and stuff, that dink and dunk stuff has worked against Seattle.
If you keep things in front of you, if you keep things in front of you in this game and in this defense, if you take the same approach that you took, you're not going to play the same way you did against Kyler Murray. You're not going to hang off of them. You're not going to say, okay, we'll wait for it. Dare him to beat you deep. Dare this quarterback to throw over the top of you, even with the DBs that you have. That's absolutely the route to do it. Don't give him easy things in this game.
Well, doesn't that mean blitz? Doesn't that mean to just change things up? And honestly, that's not something Seattle traditionally does, at least with Jamal Adams out.
It means putting guys up on the line of scrimmage and asking them to run with the wide receivers. It means putting guys up and saying, get your hands on people, and playing defense like the Seahawks have always played defense. It means not being timid and not saying we're gonna sit back and we're gonna let you complete everything you want underneath. It means having a little bit of swagger and a little bit of toughness in this game and saying we might be undermanned here, but this is a quarterback we should be able to punk here in our own stadium. This is a team that you should be able to do this to. And if San Francisco comes in here and is able to run over the top of them, It's going to fundamentally change the expectations that I have, or what I see as the ceiling for this team, because that absolutely should not happen.
First off, B-plus speech. I think if we added some music underneath it, I would be super pumped. I'd be ready to run through a wall right now to go up against the 49ers. I don't know that I'd go that far as to say it's going to fundamentally change if they were to get run over by San Francisco, because I do think with Adams back eventually... I thought we keep saying that, and I was saying it. Don't tell me to be patient about the Seahawks defense. I'm a bit of a hypocrite there. But also with Snacks Harrison, you would think over time is going to be more and more of an impactful player. But if you do get beat in a physical way, that is going to be one of those things where afterwards I think you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, dang, what are we good at here? What are we good at on this side of the football?
And here it is. You find out the baseline for any defense is stop the run. They got to do it. It's Danny and Gallant. Right now it's time for us to take a tour around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL
brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
DJ, happy Blue Friday to you guys and everybody listening today. Well, Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll had this to say about the current running back situation for Sunday.
Yeah, we're going all the way to game day with a few guys here. We're going to have to wait and see. You know, Homer's coming back. We got to see how Chris's foot is. We're going all the way to game day on that one. It looks like Carlos has got a hamstring that might keep him from getting in there, Carlos Hyde.
And then he also gave us an update on Jamal Adams.
Jamal wound up ill in the middle of the week here, so it set him back. We'll find out where he is. You know, by game day, he will not have had a quality work week, so we'll see what that means.
What are you most worried about? Whose absence do you think will affect the Seahawks the most?
No, Adams is going to hurt. You need guys to get to the edge, and you just haven't really had that same kind of wallop factor, I guess, that you had against New England, that you had at least for most of the game against Dallas for a while, and I think that he's a big part of that.
I'm going Chris Carson. I'm not very optimistic that he'll be able to play. It sounds like they're going to wait until Sunday for him to really test out the foot to see if he can go. I think they'll really miss Carson if he's not there.
He's tough, though. We thought he was going to miss time when Tristan Hill twisted his leg off.
Yes.
And
wondered if he was even going to make the rest of the season.
Right, and he's there the next game, and he played great against Miami.
Well, the Falcons earned an exciting win over the Panthers last night in Thursday Night Football, and Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan showing off a little confidence, saying, quote, "This win could be the start of something." Something.
It's the start of Matt Ryan not having to worry about Trevor Lawrence being drafted on the Falcons.
That division is winnable.
Tampa Bay, New Orleans?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Even for Atlanta?
They don't have any margin for error. But how many wins do you think is going to take that division? Because I think it's going to be 10.
Oh, you only think 10? I think with the way the Bucs are playing, I think it might be 12.
See, I don't think the Bucs are going to be able to hold this up. I think we're seeing their high water mark, and they're going to come back to earth here. Plus, they're going to have Antonio Brown that's going to come back in, and he's going to mess everything up.
I'm looking at the Falcons schedule ahead. Broncos, Saints, Raiders, Saints, Chargers, Bucks, Chiefs, Bucks. They got all their division games ahead of them. So I suppose it is in their hands. But at the same time, it's hard to see them doing it. I just feel like that choke, that loser DNA is too rich in their veins. They almost blew it last night, too.
They did. They missed that extra point. Yep. And you thought it was going to come down because they're up 8, attempting the extra point to make it 2 possessions. Nope.
Nope.
Yeah, you're right. They're not going to come close. They're not going to come close to winning the division.
I saw this.
They'll get to 500. They'll get enough. Matt Ryan, you're right. They'll win enough that Matt Ryan won't be replaced by Trevor Lawrence.
I saw this meme yesterday. Stacy alerted me to it, of this little baby like petting a duck, and it was like the Falcons holding on to a lead that they actually could keep in their grasp. It was very wholesome.
If you're a Falcons fan, would you want them to take a lead at this point?
No. I want them to lose the rest of their games. I want to have the best possible draft pick I can have. I know that I'm going in a different direction. And, you know, I'm also right now trying to find a way to unload all of the big contracts that I have on my team. Because I think that they need a big, healthy reset.
Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy says they are preparing Ben DiNucci to start versus the Eagles on Sunday.
I'm a better DiNucci. He stinks. So
he's not going to be any good.
Nope.
It's going to be a disaster. Did you guys hear the exchange yesterday where one of the Dallas reporters got mad at another Dallas reporter question?
Really?
it was awesome.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, the question came up about, Mike, you've been very meticulous about your practice approach, both in Green Bay and here. Have you considered adjusting it because of the slow starts that you've gotten off? And as the question ends, you hear this guy just go, God! And then McCarthy kind of laughs. He goes, I didn't think the question was that bad. That wasn't me.
That's fantastic. Man, it must be something else to witness this mess unfold in Dallas. Because what direction are they going with Mike McCarthy? and you assume that Dak Prescott's going to be back next season and that things could be slightly better next year, but this Mike McCarthy experience, I just don't see how it's going to improve from where it is right now, barring them doing a major flushing of players on this roster.
I don't understand why you hire a head coach to be a CEO. If your head coach should either be running a defensive or an offensive system. He's not doing either right now. Kellen Moore is calling their offense, and Mike Nolan, who doesn't have a clue, is on their defense. So if you go, do you have him put in his offense? You have him do that in his second year, which means you've got to give him a year to get that in place, which means you go into a third year. I don't understand the thought process. I do not know why you would hire a head coach who is not installing an offensive or a defensive system. You're hiring an administrator at that point. We would like you to go and be a middle manager, please.
Yeah, they hired a politician. They hired someone who is folksy and who knows how to kiss babies and shake a hand and lie about how he looked at the Cowboys film the year before and then admit that in his introductory press conference with Jerry Jones right next to him.
Well, amid some injuries, some trade rumors, and punching one of his own teammates in the face, Saints wide receiver Michael Thomas is finally returning to practice.
Oh, everything's fine.
This still makes no sense to me. That he missed a game for a fight he had that we didn't know about until game day. He's reinstated the next week, but then misses that next game because of an injury that he suffered in practice on Friday? Like, I none of this makes sense to me. None of it makes sense to me at all.
It's bizarre. And I think one of the things that the Saints have working in their favor is that there's no open locker room, because I'm really curious as to what the average player is saying about Mike Thomas. I know that his Twitter handle of Can't Guard Mike has turned into a joke around the locker room, Can't Stand Mike. How much does he help this Saints team as well? They're an interesting team. I mean, we all believe they're talented, and yet they seem, with Drew Brees, how the locker room is handling him right now, I still wonder about that. And Mike Thomas, they have been a tremendous disappointment thus far.
They've been a huge bump. And I actually think you want overrated teams who aren't as good as their record, frauds. I would list New Orleans right up there.
I agree with you. I think they're number one. And it's not to say that they're bad right now, but I think everyone had the expectation that this is the most complete team defensively and offensively in the league. Their defense has been bad, and you're not even talking about it because you're constantly talking about Michael Thomas and how he's angry being in New Orleans.
That is around the NFL. The Seattle Seahawks are getting ready to come back home in a, not a make or break game, but this is a gut check. How tough are they? We'll tell you next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
We do have a couple injury updates for you. We'll hear more from Pete Carroll later, but in his interview with Dave Wyman that aired this morning on Seattle's Morning News, we expect Travis Homer. It sounds like Travis Homer is going to play. Carlos Hyde's a longer shot, and Chris Carson will be a game-time decision. And then Jamal Adams, whom the Seahawks had hoped would be available, hasn't been able to practice this week because he got sick. I think that sounds like a much longer shot, though. Pete held out the possibility that it is a game-time decision.
Do you think that they put Carson out there and then pull him if it's not right?
I don't think they let him play if they're not confident of how he feels. I think he is going to say he's ready to play. I think it's going to be up to Seattle to manage and base it on what he's saying about whether there's a risk of aggravating his foot.
How do you do it with that? Because I imagine if I'm Chris Carson, I want to prove to everybody, no, I am not injury prone. I don't get hurt. I will be out there every single Sunday. It's a contract year for me.
And it takes the trainer really looking at what they ask him to do and believing, does he have confidence and does he look strong? Seattle's, I'll say this again. I think Seattle has an edge in its sports science.
I know you've said this. Diagnosis.
I really believe it. I think Seattle is really good at it. And their ability to hold guys back and not risk having chronic or longer-term injuries, I would suspect that Chris Carson is not going to play. But I also thought that earlier this season. I didn't expect him to play with that knee injury, and he did. So we'll kind of wait and see.
Was he a game-time decision for that? I don't remember. He was. Okay. Well, dang. I feel like that means he will, right? And that's got to be so tricky for that medical staff, Danny, that you like so much. And honestly, I'm with you. There's nothing that I can say that indicates otherwise. But that's tricky. When you see a guy, you can't see what is level is going through him. And at some point, too, when your depth chart is the way that it is at running back, does it become Carson's choice?
No, because you need him more in the months ahead than you do right now. As important as this game is, and I would say this for both he and Jamal Adams, you're going to be helped by having those guys. This is a game you should be able to win. And it's not an all-hands-on-deck situation, right? The all-hands-on-deck is I don't care how banged up you are. You've got to get out there because there's the repercussions of losing this game are so great. This is a game that, for all of the injuries Seattle has, San Francisco has suffered even more. I mean, they're still dealing with the question of whether their quarterback's 100% healthy after he suffered a high ankle sprain, and that might be something that affects him this entire season. You should be able, Travis Homer and DJ Dallas, you should be able to manage. Look what San Francisco's doing with their running backs. And last week they had some guy I'd never heard of that was running, and he's hurt this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. All right, well, I hope that they're able to get by with this group. I don't feel great about it, but hearing Travis Homer is healthier, that does make me feel good about the Seahawks just deciding, all right, let's air it out. Let's air it out.
It was Jeff Wilson who was the running back for them last week. This is also, it's not a rivalry game in the sense that, hey, these two teams have been battling for division supremacy. It is a rivalry game in that we all know the recent history between these two teams, and the 49ers are the defending division and conference champion. And there is a little something of all of the teams in the division, the 49ers are the ones that I think Seattle has the most deep-rooted hostility with. And there is the sort of nouveau riche classic power. The 49er fans will point to having four more Super Bowl championships and Seattle being the recent newcomer. The Seahawks will point out, well, none of those Super Bowls have come since 1994. Mm-hmm. And the Seahawks have won 10 of the past 12 regular season games. But yeah, there would be some extra satisfaction in putting a foot at the back of San Francisco's head and grinding their face into the mud a little bit.
Oh, definitely, because until, I would love to send them back to where they were. Before Jim Harbaugh came in, they were maybe the worst team in the NFL from 2000 on, right? They were awful. And honestly, in the years after that, not very good until Kyle Shanahan came in. But that rivalry is always going to have a little something to it. I just find it interesting that it does have this layer to it. I know that they have been in the NFC for now 18 years, but to create a new rivalry takes time and it takes iconic moments. And that's the great part about this. There are so many iconic moments. And I can't think of one that really San Francisco has on Seattle. You know, like, as far as ones that really mean something, what is it that they have on us?
The Terrell Owens Sharpie incident in 2002, the Monday Night Football game, and Terrell Owens catches a touchdown against Sean Springs. It was Seattle has its new stadium.
Wow.
And then he pulls a Sharpie out of his sock.
Great move.
He autographs the football and then hands it to his agent, who I believe was in one of the field boxes that was there. That's probably one of the more definitive moments that has been in this. There was a Tavares Jackson fumble in a 2011 game where Seattle had kind of gotten its back up, and this was the game. It was Christmas Eve, and after San Francisco won, San Francisco's offensive coordinator Greg Roman, who now runs the Ravens offense, kind of walked through the back of the press box shouting Merry Christmas, which I thought was an extremely graceful move. Like, it was really, like, nothing exudes class like shouting at a bunch of reporters on your way to the elevator.
Yeah, no, you're right on that front. And, my gosh, if you were back in that situation again, if you could turn back time, how would you 100% handle it? Because didn't you go track this guy down, right?
I went and asked him in the elevator. I asked if he was the one that shouted. Yeah, no, I thought I handled it professionally and appropriately. I tried to pin down who shouted it. He explained that a lot of people were shouting. I said that, no, I think it was only one person. Was it you? And then the elevator started to close.
Now that
I was very satisfied with that.
Now that you've walked into the world of sports radio, where we don't have to be as professional, what would you have said? What would Danny, the heckling.
Nah, I'm the same dude, man. I'm the same dude. I would have done exactly what I did then.
Okay.
I would have absolutely tried to provide information in the most objective way possible. Yeah, absolutely. Were you the guy that shouted that? I mean, that's the one, right? There was a long touchdown run by Frank Gore in San Francisco in 2013. That in the regular season game there, where he kind of got Earl flat-footed, but that was kind of the last glimmer, because once Richard Sherman tipped that pass,
mm-hmm.
once he went up in the air and as Michael Crabtree kind of gave him a shove and he kind of spun and then he tipped that pass back to Malcolm Smith, that was kind of the turning point in everything here. Yeah, here it is. Listen to this. It was the tip.
Shotgun for Kaepernick, takes the snap, looks, fires near side, going for the end zone, ball is tipped up and out of the way, is it picked off, it is, it's picked off in the end zone, the Seahawks intercept in the end zone, Richard Sherman tips it, Malcolm Smith picks it off in the end zone, intended in the far corner, the Seahawks are going to run this baby down, we are going to New Jersey, holy smoke! The defense does it again.
Don't mess with the best. And when you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Absolutely love that. A couple of texters, Danny, did bring up the last play of the game last year.
Oh, the Jacob Hollister game?
Yeah.
Doesn't that kind of even out, though, with the missed field goals, that the missed field goal that San Francisco had in the other Monday night game?
Sometimes the recency bias, I think, gets in the way of that, though. Yes, they blew that one by missing the field goal, and with the end, they could have run a little more time off the clock. Jimmy Garoppolo misses a wide-open guy down. Oh, I checked that. Shaquille Griffin made a great play. I'm thinking about the Super Bowl again, because that's where Garoppolo really missed that pass. I don't know. I don't think they even themselves out. I feel like being stopped at the 1 yard line, especially when you had it and everything slowed down, Marshawn Lynch comes on the field for a moment of redemption and he doesn't get that carry. That one, yeah, that one, I feel like we can't quite overlook that one as badly as I want to.
Here's the thing, though. Both teams made the playoffs, right?
True.
It was to decide the division, and Seattle would have played at home the next week instead of having to go on the road. But it wasn't. There's something when it's a winner take all kind of situation. It was elevated. It was a great game, and it was a disappointing finish to the Seattle Seahawks. But that's like a fraction of the actual pain that's caused by the tip, right? Like,
yeah.
That's,
oh,
like,
no doubt. Like I'm not trying to compare
1%, it. 1%. Like if on the one hand you have like that's not even as bad as the game on Thursday night where Jed York had to apologize to the San Francisco fans for what happened, and you watch Russell Wilson and Richard Sherman eat turkey on your mid-yard line. Like losing at the 1 yard line in a game that you still made the playoffs, like that's not even as significant as the Thursday night massacre that occurred.
Yeah, and to your point about you split the season series, I think had they played each other again, I really don't know how that result would have gone. The tip is never going to be top because you also have Richard Sherman going full WWE afterwards.
There is a funny point at which Richard Sherman cost the 49ers a chance to get to the Super Bowl by that play. And then you can make the argument that he cost them the Super Bowl last year because he was in coverage on Sammy Watkins when he gave up that completion.
He got juked.
So they've gotten it from both sides, a double-edged sword by Richard Sherman, in each case cutting off their chances at victory.
Is this a long con? Was this always a play? Was the hullabaloo between Richard Sherman and the Seahawks always so that in that big-time moment, Richard Sherman could get at the 49ers once again?
It is Danny and Gallant. It's going to be time for us. It's 49er week. The Seahawks back at home in a division game they absolutely need to win. We're going to raise flags coming up next.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
It is that time we get together and put our heads together. We've got Billy Butcher in the studio. Paul Gallant.
That's right, mate. Soups. You hate soups.
from the boys, DJ Wilder, behind the glass for us. I was going to throw a flag on Kyle Shanahan. I'm changing my mind. I'm throwing a flag on the texters as a general whole today, but specifically on one of the 408. There is something, I don't know if it's because this year Halloween fell on a weekend.
Me and the Ghetto Boys were trick-or-treating.
But you've been a bunch of jackals out there today. Like, there's been a lot of really mean stuff tweeted in, and not that I really particularly care, and I'm giving it back to some of you guys, but there's some savagery in the air, an air of hostility today, and maybe it's the Seahawks are coming off of loss, and it's October 3rd, I don't know.
Here's my theory, and this is my own theory. Halloween is my favorite holiday. It is a time where I think adults get to have a little more fun than they normally do. And you also usually have Halloween fall on the same weekend where you get an extra night, an extra hour, right? Because you have the clocks changing and all that. I feel like the inability for some to celebrate Halloween in its true and authentic way might be a bit of a bummer for some people. It stinks. I feel bad for kids, too. This has got to be a weird time. So maybe that's it, Danny. They're not getting enough candy in their system.
So generally on the texters, but specifically on this jackal from the 408. Amazing how you clowns forget to mention the fact that Russell Wilson has not missed time and sustained injuries. Let's see if the Seahawks can win a game with Geno Smith.
Oh, this is the guy that
his hind parts off.
This is the guy that keeps saying squawk, 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 right?
Correct.
Well, he's a 49ers fan, so, I mean, he's just sad inside.
Yeah, but that whole thing, I said that, responded to him, I was like, I don't understand. The 49er fans, so cute, so predictable, and he just keeps coming back. 49er fans are the most, they're the worst. They're just the worst.
You have long experiences with this.
Yeah, that the fact that it goes back, you haven't really won since 94. You haven't been all that relevant for most of the past 10 years. And yet there is some sort of air of entitlement, or you can't seek out someone else to talk trash and then accuse them of being obsessed with you. You can't text into a Seattle radio station and then say, you guys are looking down your nose at us. Sir, you're the one who's making this observation. Like, you're the one that seems to be obsessed.
The most relevant thing about the San Francisco 49ers since they last won a Super Bowl is that Colin Kaepernick played for them.
Yeah. Yes.
That's it. That's all you got. Nice Super Bowl appearance, though.
You've gone through three coaches since you were good. You appear to have a good coach now. But you're 4-3, and two of those wins come over against New York. I concluded our text exchange with the 408 by saying, it's clear you're a child. Does your mom know you're playing around on her phone?
Yeah. Go back to the basement, little buddy.
Just want to point out that a texter from, I think it's from the 425, also did point out, 49er fans keep telling us about the Week 17 win last year because that's all they have since 1994. Yeah. That's their biggest win.
Seriously, 10 of the last 12 games, Seattle's won. How many 49er fans does it take to change a light bulb?
How many, Danny?
How many?
1,000. Two to change the light bulb and the other 998 to tell you how it's not quite as good as the old light bulb used to be.
I like that.
DJ, what do you got?
I am raising a flag for former Astros manager and now seems to be the new Detroit Tigers manager, AJ Hinch. I always felt like in this whole Astros cheating scandal, he got the shorter end of the stick. He actually, after a little bit of time, of course, when the scandal was out there, admitted to knowing that everything was happening, admitted to these players cheating. And I always felt like he was the one that really got the most heat from everybody, and I'm actually happy for him that he's getting an opportunity in a similar situation with a young team like the Tigers that have a lot of promising prospects, just like the Astros when he took over. So I'm happy for AJ Hinch that he's getting another opportunity, just because I really didn't like how much heat he got, even though he did admit to the cheating.
You're not raising a flag for Tony La Russa for the White Sox?
No.
You don't find that they're bringing in the 300-year-old man who talks about the right way to celebrate?
No, I'm good. I hope that I really like so many of those players. You know, they got Nick Madrigal, Aloy Menez, and all those guys. I really hope it crashes and burns in year one. And he's gone. I don't like him.
Oh, no. You want them to fully commit to him for him to antagonize people and the Mariners to trade for Tim Anderson, right?
Very true, actually. Yes.
That's what I want. That's what I would
love,
like.
Love Tim Anderson here.
Why did the White Sox get La Russa instead of Hinch?
There is a very specific phenomenon that will happen across sports where a team that kind of has been okay-ish, felt it should have been better last year, decides they need a disciplinarian. And they bring in the Tom Coughlin-like character. That's what La Russa is. He's the guy that's coming in here to toughen him up.
Disciplinarians don't work anymore.
Nope, they don't.
Interesting. We'll see how that one plays out. Likely poorly.
Flag raised to AJ Hinch. I agree. I'd like to see him get a second chance.
I'm happy for him, too. I always had good experiences with him. I will raise a flag to Brian Schottenheimer. I love this guy. I can't believe I'm saying that, because I remember when I was elsewhere, I thought to myself, oh, here we go again. Brian Schottenheimer, boring offense. And then I come here. Schottenheimer has changed the Seahawks offense in a way that I know has a lot of the cooking people happy. They are throwing it less on second and long than any team in the league, which is all the cooking people really wanted to see. We like to troll them and make fun of them, but that was really the biggest thing, the biggest pitch that they were trying to get the Seahawks to fall in line with. But I also love that Brian Schottenheimer and Pete Carroll, they know about the Let Russ Cook campaign and that they've played along with it the way that they have.
He's playing with a lot of confidence right now, and you know, we knew at some point we might lose a game, and you know what, we did lose a game, and if anything, it motivated us to get back to work. But I think it's fun for the fans. I think it's fun for people to talk about. But at the end of the day, we want to win, and if that takes us not letting Russ cook, okay, we'll do that too. If we think we got to let Russ cook, or that's the way the game unfolds, and we'll be pulling out our recipe books and mixing all the different ingredients and seeing how it tastes.
See, even put in a metaphor at the end.
If the Seahawks win the division, should Brian Schottenheimer do a press conference wearing a chef's hat?
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be so cool. Or Russ does. I mean, why hasn't Russ done it already, right?
I know.
People would ask him, and he would just say, haha, you know, do his like little trademark giggle, and then like move on just to talking about, yeah, you know, we're just trying to compete. We're just trying to win.
I'm excited for this game.
Same. A little nervous. Not going to lie.
I want to see the Seahawks punk them, man. And I think they're going to do it. I want to see San Francisco run into this game and find what... they think that they're men of will and determination, and then they find out what will and determination truly are.
And I hope to feel the same way that all y'all feel about Jimmy Garoppolo. I want to see a Wobbleopolo performance. Weebles Wobbleopolo... and they often throw bad passes.
I feel terrible for laughing at that.
I did not want to laugh at that.
See,
I'm going into the weekend with a laugh from Danny. Those cackles, oh man, they just get me going.
Thanks to Michael Bumpus for joining us, the Professor John Clayton this morning for our morning drive. DJ Wilder's done a fantastic job this week, and he's Paul Gallant, and yeah, don't bring any superhero costumes near him.
And he is Danny O'Neill, and Homelander is the worst, a sociopath, a true psychopath, unlike George Kittle and unlike Kyle Shanahan. So long, farewell. You will hear us on Monday with Pete Carroll.